Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to this, the latest Burr News Facebook Live interview. Joined this afternoon by Dr. Eva Brown, former Premier of Bermuda. Dr. Brown, thank you very much for sparing some time for us today. It's been
thank
a pleasure.
You. Thank you.
We'll go straight into the interview. There's an awful lot to talk about, and one of the, I suppose, surprising announcements overnight was the resignation of Zane De Silva from the Cabinet. The Premier put out a statement saying that Mr. De Silva had expressed the conflict he faces by a set of circumstances this new government inherited, specifically the decision made by the former government to significantly reduce the fees paid for MRI and CT scans in Bermuda, and the new government's actions to mitigate the impact of those fee reductions without increasing health insurance costs. Now, he was present at the press conference you gave here, the Brown Darrell claim last week. I'm assuming that he's come out in support of you in that respect. Were you surprised? Have you spoken to him about this?
Oh, yes. We speak many times a day. Zane is a special person. He's a man among men. His principle was very simple, that he did not want to be in a particular situation, sort of presiding over the closure of his friend's business. And I think he did the honorable thing and withdrew. And I have nothing but respect for what he's done.
Did he tell you in advance?
Yes.
What, what did he say? Can you say?
He just, what I just told you.
Oh, okay.
You know, he just said, I don't feel good. I don't feel comfortable being in this situation. And I don't want to make other people uncomfortable. And so I think I will resign.
He was the only minister that appeared at the press conference last week. Is there any suggestion you think that he may have been asked to resign?
I don't think he was asked to resign.
Because there's been some suggestion that perhaps this might signify some sort of rift in the PLP, some sort of power struggle.
Well, I don't think it's all of that. I mean, of course, it's open to be read like that, but a difference is a difference. It doesn't have to mean a rift. It can just be a difference. And
in politics, a difference tends to form into a
rift. A difference can become a rift, you know. But in this instance, I don't think that it represents a rift at this point, at least. I don't see it like that.
The fact that he wasn't persuaded to stay, persuade himself to stay, do you read anything into that in terms of how the PLP government, this government, is perhaps backing the charges from the Bermuda Health Council?
I don't know. I don't know that there's any connection. You know, there is a thing called a code of conduct, and people play as a team, and he didn't want to be on that team any longer.
But I just wonder if you think there might be a suggestion that that team wasn't playing ball with him.
I don't know, to be quite honest, and I'm not going to speculate. Clearly, Zane feels that we have been unjustly treated and just doesn't want to keep on going on and on in that position. How the other cabinet members feel, I don't know, but I'm going to assume that the decision of the Premier was the decision that was supported by cabinet.
Let's just go into the detail of the Brown Darrell Clinic and what's happened. I was researching for this interview yesterday and this morning, and I kind of compiled a short timeline, which I just want to run past you quite briefly, because obviously the viewers don't want to get completely involved with all the nitty-gritty. To me, one of the first mentions of this was May the 29th, or thereabouts, last year, when I think you put a statement out. We said, in an email dated May the 16th, 2017, the Bermuda Health Council informed the BHCS and Brown Darrell that, effective June the 1st, 2017, payments for the MRI and CT scans will be reduced by as much as 78%. Following July, you talked about having to take pay cuts because of this situation. And then last week, January the 14th, actually, I think it was, You said few businesses could survive an 87% cut. I take it there's been a typo somewhere. Mm-hmm. In revenue with only 2 weeks' notice. You've had more than 2 weeks' notice, haven't you?
No, not really. Not
formal
notice.
Because that's when you knew about it last May.
I knew about the threat 5 years ago. So if you want to go back to 5 years ago and say, well, you knew it was coming, I couldn't argue with you. But in terms of official notification, I've handed you an email that shows that on May 15th, 2017, I received an email from Ms. Carlington at the Bermuda Health Council indicating that these cuts would go into effect. So I knew all along there was an effort. This is not something that just started. In 2013, the then CEO of the Health Council indicated that it was her intention to begin the reduction in healthcare costs by starting with diagnostic imaging. To this day, I don't know why. I asked her why. She said, because you're low-hanging fruit. And I still don't know what that means either.
Easy to pick.
And I thought that that was not very scientific, not very fair, not very just. Jerome, I have been in support of healthcare cost reduction for all of my professional life. And I have worked in California, Washington, D.C., other places where I've always lobbied for, worked for reduction in healthcare. And in our own practice, we go a long way to try to see to it that people don't spend unnecessarily. But to be singled out as an entity in the healthcare reduction exercise, to be singled out without any justification, to me, is unfair.
Just getting back a little bit on that. I mean, I take that point, and I mm-hmm. want to come back onto the healthcare costs later on. But it was stated these cuts were coming on June the 1st last year. Mm-hmm. So what happened between June the 1st and end of January this year? Why weren't they implemented, do you know?
I don't know. I think they were talking about them, from what I understand. The technical officers made one recommendation mm-hmm. for cuts, submitted that to the board, the political appointees, and they slashed it further. So I think that process itself took a while.
So what's happened with you between June the 1st last year and now? I feel like you presumably you've been fighting for these cuts. You're aware they're going to happen at some stage. Are you given extra notice in that time of when they're happening?
No. As I said, there've always been little tidbits of threats that the prices were going to be cut. We were not going to be surprised by a reduction, but when we saw the extent of this slashing, we knew then that there was a vendetta component to all of this. You just don't cut a CT of the brain from 1,400 or 1,200 down to 275. It's just, that's not done. Now, they claim that they used RVU methodology, which is a relative value unit. And I can tell you that that has been a total joke because it was not RVU methodology.
I mean, they issued a statement saying it was that.
Yes, because they issue statements like that because most people don't know what they're talking about. Most people who read it.
So when I say they, I mean the
Bermuda Health Council. Yeah, the Bermuda Health Council said that they used that methodology. That is an American methodology. And in the United States, RVU methodology is something that is done by doctors. Mm-hmm. So I think in the U.S. it's something like 31 doctors who are on this committee. and they come together, they represent various specialties and what have you, and then they are assisted by health economists, health pricing experts, and they arrive at reductions or increases in a comprehensive way across the board, so that I might have something that I do that is cut. John Smith, who is an ENT specialist, he may have something cut that he does, but never, never is RVU methodology applied in such a targeted fashion.
I mean, the Bermuda Health Council, just putting the other side of the story, mm-hmm. Categorically denies that. I mean, it actually says...
Well, they would have to.
But it says in print that there was a 2-year consultation process and adopted a staggered approach to its implementation. The new methodology was applied to ultrasound and X-ray imaging in 2015 and MRI and CT services in 2017, and it denies categorically targeting you.
You mentioned X-ray. Let me tell you a little bit about targeting. To this day, and they may have made a change recently, but when we received notice of the cuts, Bermuda Healthcare received $66 for a chest X-ray, and the hospital received $335. Now, there's no RVU methodology in the world that can be used to justify that. So... And I can point out other instances of it as well. I can't say what the individual used to arrive at these prices, but there are just so many irrational costs in there. For example, a CAT scan of the arm is reimbursed at a lower rate than an ultrasound of the arm. Now, if you say that to most doctors, they don't understand it. They don't understand how could that be. And so I believe that Bermuda, the Bermuda Health Council, the Ministry of Health, the government will all benefit if we can get some expertise in terms of reviewing this.
That's an interesting question, actually, interesting point. It's actually leaping ahead. It's one of the questions I'm going to ask you. Do you think... There is a reason now to have an independent, and I mean truly independent, people are probably not even Bermudians,
right,
to examine this situation. Is that something you would like to see?
I would love to see it, and I would be willing to abide by it, provided that the people were truly independent and had not been given directions ahead of time. A true and honest, independent review of all medical fees in Bermuda, by people whose credentials have been established. Unfortunately, in Bermuda, we only have one person who is called a health economist. One person.
Small island.
But these prices affect people's lives, and so therefore you want to get it right as quickly as you can.
Have you suggested that?
I have suggested it.
Response did you get?
I suggested it. Actually, I shared it with Zane, and I think he took it further. But I think what happened here is that the Health Council boxed in the PLP government. This was really an OBA government initiative. This was something where Mr. Moniz was directly involved. And at the time that the Health Council made this decision, the council was full of OBA candidates, political consultants to the minister, Moniz, and so I can't say that there was any attempt to be objective.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to be clear. Mr. Moniz was health minister at the time? Or?
At one point, he was the health minister. Okay. But when Mr. Richard Ambrosio was appointed, I don't know whether Mr. Moniz was the minister then.
Okay, I
do know that he eventually, it became known that he was Mr. Moniz's political consultant.
Just going back to the, you said it's inherited by the PLP.
Right.
The Health Minister, Kim Wilson, has made it plain that a review is ongoing.
Yes.
And they expect off fees and charges, I guess, for this and other fees, and they'll be announced later on this year. Have you had any involvement in that?
No, I haven't had any involvement in that. That's promising, you know, that somebody's talking about reviewing all of the fees and stop this piecemeal targeting kind of approach. It's not scientifically sound, and it is morally unjustified.
The Health Minister did step in, and has been reported that they gave you, I suppose, for want of a better phrase, a subsidy.
Yes, a grant, they called it.
It was a grant, was
yes.
It? So this wasn't a settlement as such, in terms of you agreed to settle this amount of money. It was $778,000, I believe.
Yes.
How did that work? Was that a contract that you had, a settlement with the government?
It was a settlement in the sense that there was court action pending.
From you?
Yes.
Against the Health Council?
Yes, and we agreed to withdraw that particular action.
So this was part of a settlement?
Yes.
So what were the terms of the settlement? Are you at liberty to say?
Well, no, I can only say that in terms of the grant, what the minister said is absolutely accurate. But I liken it to my having my wallet stolen. And I say, Jeremy, I know who stole my wallet. And you say, how much did you have in it? And I say, $100. And you say, well, here's 50. Well, thank you. You know, I appreciate it, and thank you very much. However, I had credit cards. I still have $50 that I'm out of. And so what I've said is the government has definitely taken steps to help us some. But we suffered staggering losses since June 1. I mean,
so that's June 1 is when the cost came in.
That's right. And our losses were so staggering that in spite of what the government has done for us, and we do appreciate that, looking at the new numbers that the government established, those numbers are still 40, 50, 60% below what it used to be prior to June 1. And we just can't operate in a viable way.
You mentioned the court case. Can you just tell me what the court case was about?
The court case was about this unfair targeting that we say we experienced from the Health Council. We say that the lapsing of time and the exchange of emails does not necessarily constitute consultation. You know, real consultation would have put me across the table at least once from the people on the Health Council. The only time I've ever done that is when I asked for it. I asked for an appearance, and that didn't go far. So I don't think that the consultation, the absence of real, meaningful consultation, was at the root of our
It was at the
lawsuit.
Court case, then, that you were claiming that there was no consultation?
Yes.
Okay, and the court case was settled out of court?
Yes.
With this settlement?
Yes.
And that wasn't enough to keep you going?
No. It was enough to help us out, but it was not enough to help us to keep going. And in other words, back to the wallet analogy, what about the original theft? You know,
just to the average layman, I mean, certainly to me, it seems like a heck of a lot of money.
Yeah.
$778,000,
yes.
And that's not enough to keep you.
Yes,
going.
It does. You see, there are two aspects of that I'd like to deal with. $700,000 sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money. There are many people in Bermuda who look at that number and say, "Well, what does he want?" Well, I want justice. I want justice. The other thing is, I know it's unusual to associate a black business with that kind of money, but that's what our costs are relative to it. You know, this machine, to get the Brown Darrell CT up and running costs in excess of $3 million. You know, we pay more than $40,000 a year for our maintenance of the machine. It's an expensive business. And if you if when you hear the hospital claiming that it is expensive to run a hospital, it is also expensive to run these services outside the hospital.
Do you accept that charges for MRIs and CT scans have been very high for years?
No, I don't accept that they've been very high. I accept that the CT prices have been consistent with the relative value in Bermuda. This is Bermuda, where a loaf of bread costs twice as much as it does in New York or more. Bermuda is an expensive place. In fact, some people said it's one of the more expensive places in the world. So the CT reimbursements, I think, have been consistent with the cost of living in Bermuda. The MRI prices, same thing. I would note, though, that Bermuda Healthcare agreed to accept 20% less than King Edward on MRIs, and that was in 2004. Because we needed, that was a matter of negotiation, and then we said, you know what, we think we can make it on this. And we never came back to the table asking for the fees to be equalized.
It's been recorded, I don't know if you accept this, that Bermuda also has the highest incidence of usage of CT scans and MRIs and anywhere in the world.
That may be. Bermuda is also sicker than most places in the world. I've given you some information that will show you that Bermuda is very high on the list in a number of areas.
Yes,
amputations are done in Bermuda out of proportion to our population
because of
the diabetes. Well, and that's a fact. And if diabetes causes there to be more amputations, then surely it can cause other conditions. If too many scans are being done, I think first you should go to the hospital. The hospital does 20-some thousand scans a year, and we do about 1,000, a little over 1,000 CT scans a year. So if there are excessive scans being done, I'd suggest that the first place to check would be the hospital.
Almost a final question on this, because we've got other topics to discuss. I was kind of thinking about this yesterday and overnight and this morning, that I'm here sitting with the former leader of a Labour Party, who maybe to some people might come across as fighting lower healthcare costs, which is what a Labour Party might be about. How do you reconcile?
No, I am not fighting lower healthcare costs. Let me repeat that. I am not fighting lower healthcare costs. I am fighting the lowering of healthcare costs on us and us alone. Yes, the hospital was cut back, but then it was compensated for by increasing fees for the operating room. So we already know that the including the hospital in the cut was what I call a cosmetic cover.
What happens to, we're sitting here in the Brown Darrell Clinic, what happens on January the 31st of this building?
Well, I don't know yet. I know that in addition to CT, we're going to have to stop X-ray as well, because in the past, in order to be efficient, economically efficient, our CT tech also does the X-rays at Bermuda Healthcare. So if we don't have CT and we don't have the CT tech, chances are we won't be able to do X-rays as well. So we're probably going to lose both capabilities on January 31st. I don't look forward to it, but...
Will the building close? I don't know if it's used for anything else.
Right. It, at the moment, there's another doctor in here. He'll be moving out in a matter of weeks. And we have to make up our minds exactly what we can do, you know. And we're considering.
So you said it would close on January the 31st, but that's not
The CT unit closes.
Definitely will.
Right, but there are other things happening.
Okay.
In here. And I'm hoping that we're going to find a way to keep the rest of it going, and hopefully the rest of it may be successful enough to cover some of the expenses, you know, to keep it open. We don't want to close. That's a strictly economic decision. It's not a political decision or emotional decision. It's economic.
And just for clarity, excuse me, the Bermuda Healthcare Services, that's in effect, you'll still be offering MRIs and
yes, et cetera. Yes, that is correct. We will still be operating there. Unless we get a notice next week that they're cutting those fees by 80%.
Well, they're under review, so I wouldn't expect to get one. That'd be quite surprising.
We'll see.
Of course, the other thing that's ongoing at the moment that I have to ask about is the lawsuit with Leahy. Now, that is against the Leahy Clinic, and you were named in it.
No, I was not. I'm not a party.
No, I know. I said you were named in it, but you're not a party, sir. Right. I should have made that very plain.
Yeah, right.
Yes, it references you.
Yes,
but that's why
Mr. Moniz made sure that a public relations firm was hired to reveal certain information about me, including emails and bank accounts.
Well, that was
all
in the lawsuit.
And so, yes, we'll see how that goes.
Are you able to comment much on it?
No, other than to say that I think a mistake was made.
Clearly.
I think that to consider a 20-year-old carefully drafted agreement, a contract with the Leahy Clinic, to call it a bribe is both an insult and a mistake. And I'm hoping, because I'm a Bermudian, I'm hoping that Bermuda will be able to get out of this essentially unscathed.
Well, that's my next question, because doing the research on this yesterday, I can find a story dating May the 24th, when I think you and a group of other signatories approached Massachusetts District Court to try and get this whole thing rejected. And after that, there's been no news. So can you tell me where it's at? Because I can't find out.
No, I don't know. All I know is that they're waiting for, I think, a hearing date.
Really?
Sometime in the near future.
Is this the so-called Amici Curicae?
No, that was what we did.
Yeah, what happened with that?
Well, there was no decision with that. That's a document that you send to the court to indicate that in fact, it was not a secret in Bermuda that I had a relationship with the Leahy Clinic. I mean, it was on the sign out at the street. So everyone in Bermuda who wanted to know knew that I had a connection with the Leahy Clinic. What bothered Mr. Moniz was that he said that the relationship that I had with Leahy financially was wildly successful. I still don't know what that means. I think it means too much money for a black man.
Too much money, full stop, perhaps.
Mm.
But as far as you're aware, the case is still ongoing. It hasn't been dropped.
No, as far as I know, it hasn't been dropped. I'm hoping that eventually it will be for Bermuda's sake, because I would hate to see the Bermuda government on the wrong end of a defamation suit.
I was going to come on to that, but first of all, just so one of the rules of journalism I follow is to make sure you never assume. So I just want to just pick out some of the points for the benefit of the viewers and get your reaction to it. As you mentioned, it says over the course of nearly two decades, Leahy conspired with you to design and perpetuate an unlawful enterprise fueled by Leahy's payment of bribes to Brown, disguised as consulting fees. It then goes on and says, you ensured that Leahy became the overseas health provider of choice for Bermudians and directed lucrative healthcare contracts towards them, and that you, together with Leahy, concocted a scheme upon bribery and greed. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I mean, it's about 70 pages, which I'm not going to go into detail, but I want to hear your reaction to that. I've seen it in print and stuff, but I want to talk to you.
Whatever I said in print is probably what I would say again. Most of those allegations are untrue. Most of them, in the sense that I did have a relationship with Leahy.
Right, okay.
One of my jobs as a consultant was to promote Leahy, but there were no government contracts. He refers to government contracts, and nobody in Bermuda can find a government contract for health care. There is none. So part of that is like saying that a couple that have been married for 20 years conspired to stay together.
you obviously think it's spurious and unfounded. And you mentioned a couple of minutes ago you didn't want to see the Bermuda government landed with a defamation suit. There are very serious consequences for this if the Bermuda government loses, aren't there? And it kind of makes you think that those would have been taken into consideration first.
Well, I don't know. You'd have to talk to the people directly
involved.
It's a heck
of a gamble to
take.
It's
a very large gamble. It is very, very, very unpopular in Massachusetts because Leahy is popular in Massachusetts. I don't know how Leahy will react. I don't know. I know that they consider their reputation to be important. Time will tell.
Because one of the things about that, one of the accusations, I believe, was they were breaking U.S. federal rules. I'm never quite sure the system over there, about allegedly paying $10,000 towards a PLP banquet.
Yeah. All ridiculous. If any of those things had weight, the Department of Justice would have agreed to take the case.
And it hasn't.
No.
Do you think with hindsight that it would have been better for you if you hadn't, while you were Premier and Tourism Minister, if you hadn't been so hands-on with the Brown Darrell Clinic and BHCS?
Well, I really wasn't. I saw my last patient in 2006.
But what I mean is, sorry, you were still running the business.
No, my wife was running the business. And so no politician in Bermuda has been asked. Sir Henry Tucker was the president of the Bank of Bermuda and the leader of the UBP. Nobody ever questioned it. So I figured we were using the same standards.
I guess nobody questioned it, but it has come out as a question now because of this lawsuit.
Well, that's fine. They can ask the question. No, I don't regret it. My relationship with the Leahy Clinic goes back to 1996, and I saw no reason to change it, to halt it. We changed some of the paperwork when I became premier, and there was no activity. In fact, I could probably get witnesses from Hopkins and the other hospitals that would indicate that I went out of my way to make sure that they were treated fairly in Bermuda.
So while you were premier, your wife was hands-on with the business and dealing with Leahy?
Yes, that is correct.
So you didn't have any dealings with them?
Very little, very little.
One part jumped out at me a little bit because I think it kind of perhaps references the Brown Darrell Clinic issue. And it mentions on page 25 that the Brown Clinics have their own separate fee schedule. And it went on to say that the in 2015-2016, the fee for each MRI scans at BHCS was $1,301. CTC scans at BDC ranged from $760 up to $2,862. Right. Did you have your own fee schedule?
No, those prices were set by the... Those are the standard health benefit numbers.
So how on earth could they come across and allege that they have...
That I had our own schedule.
No. Because that, to me, when I read that, it jumped back to the issue with the Brown Darrell Clinic.
You know what? There are a lot of words I could use to describe that.
We are live, sir.
But I would just say that it's untrue. We never had a separate schedule. That 1301 was what the government agreed that the insurance company should pay. And they paid that for 10 years. And that paid the hospital 20% more. When it came to CT scans, both the hospital and Brown Darrell were paid the similar amounts. And you don't set, you can set your own fee schedule if you wish, but we did not. So we set it, so we observed the standard health benefit so that patients wouldn't have to pay any extra.
At the end of the day, doesn't a government, have a duty to take this kind of action if it thinks that the public purse has been abused?
Take what kind of action?
This lawsuit.
This lawsuit?
This kind of action being this kind of lawsuit, whether it's this one, whether it's the allegations against Port Royal, which are obviously have been unlisted now, but anything else that happens, don't they have a duty to pursue it?
They have a duty to pursue it. They have a duty to pursue it, and we have a duty to tell our side of the story.
Absolutely, which is one of the reasons. Very grateful for your time.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Would you have done it? Well, if you'd seen these allegations, do you think you would have pursued it in such...
These allegations are frivolous. Most of them are frivolous. They use the existence of a real relationship to describe something devilish and criminal. And, you know, I don't know why they think that they can get away with it, but I don't think that they will in the long run, because my relationship with the Leahy Clinic was very clear, in writing, upstanding, and everybody in the medical community knew about it. There was nothing secretive. He has made the point that I made more money as a consultant to Leahy than I did as premier. Well, I would think that that's good for Bermuda.
There's an awful lot of people paid more than premiers and prime ministers.
Thank you.
I dug out a quote from April last year, and I think you were on the radio, and you said they are going to fight. They are going to fight like my wife and I are going to fight to the last cent and the last breath. Does that still apply?
Yes.
To your dying day?
Yes.
You will do it?
Yes.
Why?
There's no question. Because I don't want to leave the Bermuda that I found. And I don't think it's fair to young doctors coming along that they should experience the same thing, that they should be treated fairly, that if there's a review of fees, that it just be a review of fees. Not a Bermuda-style review of fees where you leave some people alone and pick on other people. Just a review of fees. Use experts from Russia, Germany, Denmark, doesn't matter, United States. But be fair about it. I don't have a problem. I have recommended in the past that there could be a $70 million savings in health care if everyone's fees were cut back 10%. Everyone. So if I was against it, I wouldn't be in favor of that.
If Leahy wins, or if the government decides to withdraw the lawsuit, clearly stated that you are not involved directly in the lawsuit, but would you consider a writ for defamation against the government?
Me? Personally? I don't think so. I'd leave that up to the lawyers and seek advice from the lawyers. But, you know, If
it's dropped, it's been very damaging to your reputation.
Yes, but you see, I lived with a damaged reputation. As long as I'm in Bermuda, my reputation is under attack all the time, and I don't think I have enough time left on the planet to correct it. It'll be corrected years after I leave. People will find out the truth. But more important, if the Bermuda government drops the suit, that does not prevent or preclude Leahy from taking steps later.
The countersuit, yeah.
That's right.
We're stuck on the controversy lines at the moment, Dr. Brown. I'm sorry, but we need
that's
to go
right.
through them.
That's been my life.
We've had the Commission of Inquiry, we've had the arrest and investigation into your colleague, Dr. Reddy, and we've got the ongoing police investigation into allegations of corruption. I want to talk, I'm not going to dwell on these because they've been well documented, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about them. Starting with the Commission of Inquiry, now I know you didn't appear, you were worried about self-incrimination, so I'm going to ask you these questions and I'm going to understand if you can't comment. Mm. But your lawyer, Jerome Lynch QC, he told the Commission that if, quote, a rule or two had to be bent in awarding government contracts, it had, quote, nothing to do with corruption or backhanders, and, quote, everything to do with redressing the balance, making sure that those who had been excluded for far too long were included. Mm-hmm. He said that.
Well, he said it. He said
that. He said it on your behalf.
Statement.
I just want to know a bit more about what you
He made that statement.
Presumably you approved.
I understand the sentiment of the statement, because it is going to be impossible to address the poor distribution of wealth in Bermuda without giving some form of compensatory assistance to black Bermudians. There's no question about that. And I think that's what the lawyer was saying.
But he said a rule or two had to be bent.
Well, those are his words.
Presumably you approved them.
I didn't have to approve them. He's a grown man.
Okay, he didn't run them past you first?
No. Most black people who can count agree with that.
You also released a statement when the Commission's report was about to be released, and it was extremely strong. You talked about talking about the makeup of the Commission, including only one black member, a junior one at that, you said, I think, and not represented by a single black learned member of the Buna Bar. You said that the whole thing was an insult to the black community. Visually, it was quite disgusting spectacle, etc., etc. And it went on very much in that vein. It was kind of interesting when I was looking at the COI that there was a lot of praise for the PLP government as well in this, especially under Paula Cox. Were you being a little bit selective there, perhaps?
No, listen. When I heard about the Commission of Inquiry, I listened and I read a lot about what was being said. Then I read a quote from the newly appointed chairman. And he said he had taken a look at what allegedly had happened at Port Royal. And he said, quote, "That is straightforward fraud." This is before one witness had appeared. It was before any discussion had taken place at the commission itself. So I knew then what we were in for.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that it was a waste of time. It was a waste of time. If the chairman has said that fraud has been committed, the chairman doesn't wait until the proper process is carried out, and he says it up front, then in my view, he has illegitimized the commission.
I can't remember now, but was that? Did he say that in the final report?
I don't think he said it in the final report.
Because that's what counts.
But I know he said it. No, a lot of other things count, not just the final report. He's the chairman. And he came out publicly and said that what happened at Port Royal was straightforward fraud. And that was reported by the Royal Gazette.
I remember that quote. Yeah, I do remember it. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, if the chairman says that, then I didn't look forward to much coming from that. But I wasn't going to say anything at the commission because there was a concurrent investigation going on. And that put me in a dangerous place.
I want to come on to that next. Yes. But in terms of the commission itself, again, it kind of harks back to a question I asked earlier. Doesn't a government, the government of the day, have a duty to try and coin a phrase, follow the money, to have a sort of commission to find out if something is happening?
Yes, like JetGate.
Which is still ongoing.
Yes, yes.
That investigation is still ongoing.
Yeah, that's
as well,
what
as the
they
last
say. That's what they say. But
isn't there a duty there to do that?
There's a duty to do it
regardless of the consequences.
If you really believe that there's been, not as a result of a political vendetta, but as a result of having credible witnesses, etc. Yes, I think the government...
So you don't think there were credible witnesses in this case?
For the Commission of Inquiry? Mm. There was nothing new. Nothing new came out of the Commission of Inquiry. That's the whole point. I mean, Mr. Ball had been excused by the government. So I didn't see anything particularly new. I think civil servants took an unnecessarily harsh beating. But I to this day, don't think that that was a wise expenditure of taxpayer money.
Just on the civil servants, I mean, you gave them quite a half beating last week.
Certain ones, yes.
And the BPSU came out with a statement saying, mm-hmm. please don't do that. And presumably that was directed at you and other people, I guess, on the comments section.
Yes, I read that.
Would you agree?
No.
Why?
In my situation, having been victimized, having to close my business, I felt free to say just about anything.
But on the other hand, you say in the Commission of the Inquiry, the civil servants were unfairly castigated.
Yes, they were unfairly castigated. Certain ones were called out. And I was there one day and saw what, and I'm really talking about the way the lawyers approached the civil servants. I thought it was a little harsh. But, you know, harsh doesn't mean unfair.
Would you like to see a commission of inquiry into the UBPUs?
Well, I said so.
I
said so at the very beginning. Look, we had nothing to hide. Did we make mistakes? Yes. Is there a government that didn't make mistakes? No. And I said, okay, if you're interested in a commission of inquiry, let's do the 14 years of the PLP and go back and do 14 years of the UBP. What's wrong with that?
What response did you get?
Oh, no response. They don't want to do that because the purpose of the Commission of Inquiry was to have an impact on the upcoming election.
That was about how long ago was that? Later that, 9 months, almost a year later?
About that.
So would that still have had an impact? I mean,
it could have if it had been.
I mean, you're famous for using a phrase, this too shall pass.
That's true, but I'll tell you what. If it hadn't been such a circus, it might have been useful.
Circus?
Yeah, that's what it turned out to be.
Now, we've talked about the police investigation into allegations of corruption. I assume that's still ongoing, is it?
I assume so.
You've not been told? What's the latest update you got on that?
No, the latest I got was when the lawyer, our lawyer, asked about the state of affairs, and the commissioner said it was an ongoing investigation. So I expect that it'll be ongoing for the rest of my life.
And again, I'm going to ask the same question. Don't they have a duty to do this?
For 7 years? Well, I suppose it depends on how much you think your duty requires you to do. In $4 million plus in 7 years, I would think that you might have found something.
You have asked for, a commission of inquiry into that police investigation. Have you had any joy with that? Have you had any feedback on that?
No. We really didn't expect any positive answer on that. But you know, when the court said that the police were wrong
in
arresting Dr. Reddy.
Yeah.
And we're still waiting for someone to be charged or something to come out. I mean, 7 years and $4 million is a lot.
It's it struck me when I was researching this that we've looked through the Brown Darrell Clinic, we've looked through the Leahy, we've looked through the Commission of Inquiry, the arrest of Dr. Reddy, and the ongoing police investigation. It struck me that this is all pretty unprecedented, isn't it, for any leader, let alone the former leader of Bermuda.
Yes.
Why? Why?
Well, you know, I don't know. You'd have to ask the people
who
did it. In my opinion, it's because of the nature of my political stances, the nature of my political resistance, the words I choose to describe.
Because you have been quite abrasive.
Yes, yes. And sometimes I think it is quite understandable to be abrasive. I'm just not a mild-mannered guy. You know, I'm not a mild-mannered fella. I think I'm reasonable, I'm sensitive, probably sometimes very sensitive.
Too sensitive in that respect?
Well, I don't know about too sensitive, but I've been sensitive. I'm more sensitive to some things than I am to others, you know. But when I've been under investigation, so to speak, for 7 years, with nothing being found that we know of, with no charges being laid, I think that I have earned the right to say what I want to say.
But we'll go back to my original question. Why so many investigations, so much controversy?
Yes.
Why you? Why all directed at you?
Because
I know you'll say it's a vendetta.
It's not just a vendetta. It's that part of it that I believe is major in terms of the why they do it, is to teach young black men who might think about standing up and speaking out that this is what will happen to you. This is what will happen to you if you stand up straight and speak out and speak your mind.
So it's all about race. It's all about
colonialism. I believe that it's primarily about race. Yes.
Colonialism?
I believe, that all goes in the same pot. But you see, if I were, say, a politician who had a more apologetic way of life and a more a less abrasive, to use your word, way of saying things, and if I had pledged my allegiance to the political party that I opposed, then they may have treated me like, for example, like they treated Senator Ball, you know, who had an issue with a contract at Port Royal and admitted that he did. And they just said, okay, sorry, just apologize and we'll move on.
I mean, you came back to the island and talked about scores to settle.
Yes, I did.
So is it kind of surprising if you come up with that language? I mean, it's natural human behavior for somebody to hit back.
That's why I'm not surprised, and that's why I'm not emotionally upset by it. You know, I knew at the age of 18, 19, that if I was going to engage in fighting racism for the rest of my life, that the rest of my life was going to be difficult in part. And so I've had to find a way in my life to seek some balance and continue the fight. So when I came back, I think when I made that statement, I was about 22, 23, and I made that statement because I had been treated unfairly.
Did you settle the scores?
Still in the process.
Have you settled any?
Yes.
Can you say which ones?
The PLP won the government in 1998. And it was a score, you know, because I told someone that there had been, I think, 8 elections since Bermuda had elections. 8 elections, and the score was 8-0. And I said, I want to settle the score. I want us to win some so we can improve our numbers. And so, yes, I think having introduced specialist medical care to Bermuda was part of settling scores. In other words, I don't think it was ever intended for Bermudians to have easy access to that high level of medical care from abroad. So I'm proud that we were able to achieve that. I'm proud of the fact that I had the opportunity to serve the country as its leader for 4 years. And I'm proud of the cruise terminal at Dockyard. I'm proud of the buses we put out that were air conditioned
for the
first time. You know, yeah. Well, you know, you have to take care of these things.
Just one blast from the past, Morgan. I'm going to move on to the present day. I promise. I've got to talk about the Uyghurs. I can't let you go without talking about the Uyghurs.
Right.
This is where your comment "this too shall pass" came from.
Right.
With the furore, I think is probably a fair enough word, that it created a government house and probably in the FCO. But the problem is, it hasn't really, has it? Because they're stuck here still. It's paradise, but they're prisoners, and they still haven't got citizenship for the UK. Are you happy about that? Would you like to see more progress? Do you regret it in any way?
Oh, I don't regret the action. I really don't.
Despite the furore that it caused.
No. You can't, you know, you do things because they're the right thing to do, and then you see the consequences. And so, I don't regret doing that at all for our next door neighbor. And I do think that I was told a week ago that the Uyghurs were either in receipt of new passports or that they were about to get passports. I can't verify that. Mm-hmm. But I think that
British passports, as far as you
know. I think so, as far as I know. And I think that's the thing to do. Or you could just try to keep them here on the island. And they have proven one thing, is that they are good citizens, hardworking. They've not caused any difficulty in Bermuda. There's been no trouble, and so this too has passed.
It hasn't passed yet, though, has it?
Well, not the whole thing, but at least
it's still coming up.
They have children. They have jobs, and they live in Bermuda, and it could be worse.
I've always thought of you, Dr. Brown, as being an incredibly clever person, politically extremely astute. And yet, you say you didn't know you had to ask the governor's permission to bring them here.
Right.
You really didn't know?
No. I still say that. I consulted, as I said then, with the minister and asked the minister to check and see whether we were clear to do that. And he said, I'll get back to you. And he went and he came back to me and he said, yes, we can do it. And so we did it. And I knew that Bermuda had welcomed people, refugees from other places. So when he said that we were clear, we were clear. Now, had there not been concerns about other politics, it probably would have gone unnoticed.
What do you mean by other politics?
Well, the fact that they were in Guantanamo.
Oh, I see. You mean, so
the right. fact they were in Guantanamo, and then you had the relationship between China and the UK and what have you. If those factors hadn't been involved, I don't think this would have been a blip on the screen.
It's been well documented that you haven't got on terribly well with governors in the past. Mm-hmm. This wasn't a one-finger salute to the UK and the governor, then?
No, not at all. In fact, you know, it is not totally true that I haven't gotten along with governors. I'll tell you what I did say. I have said this to every governor. There was Governor Verica, mm-hmm. and then there was
Richard Gosney.
Mr. Gosney. And I said to both of them, on the first visit, listen, the relationship between the UK and Bermuda is an unnatural one. It's a colonial relationship. I don't like it. Some people in Bermuda like it. In fact, the majority of the people might like it. But you will understand it if you and I run into conflict at times because of that unnatural relationship. Governor Verica, in fact, both of them said that they appreciated at the time my candor, and our relationship was based on that. It wasn't a cocktail party relationship.
Moving more into the present day, while I've got you, I'd like to talk a little bit about politics.
Sure.
When I was researching this, I keep talking about researching. I spent a long time researching it. I noticed that your biography, and I had no idea about this, maybe I should, that you were born in Bermuda to Ewart Sr. and Helen Brown of Flats. His mother was a UBP MP, so was your aunt.
That's right.
You were never
My aunt was the first female minister.
So you were never drawn to the UBP?
Absolutely not.
Despite
never
being
drawn
surrounded
to it. No way. In fact, I tried to bring them over. I used to come home from Howard University and work for 2 hours trying to convince them that they were on the wrong
side. It didn't work.
It worked in the end. In the very end, they both became supporters of the Progressive Labour Party.
So why did you pursue the PLP line? Why did you pursue the Labour left to centre line with the family history line?
I wasn't thinking left, right. You know, I wasn't thinking direction. I was thinking justice. Okay. That the PLP stood for justice. And the conversation that was held in the PLP sounded more like the conversations I was having in the U.S. with other people about
in Howard University, presumably.
Yes, exactly, and so it was a natural for me. It was if I wasn't going to join the PLP, I wasn't going to be in politics in Bermuda. Yeah.
Former Minister, BA Minister Michael Fay has been writing quite a few columns. And I pull this one out because you'll hear from my question, but he was saying the PLP, it seems, is a true Labour Party in name only. He brings up examples of anti-immigration sentiments, mm-hmm. a nationalist tagline that happened in the last election, Bermuda for Bermudians, the same-sex marriage issue, etc., etc. From your perspective, from your time in politics as the leader of the PLP, is it still a Labour Party in a true sense, or do you think it's drifted towards the centre ground more?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what a true Labour Party is.
Well, I look at it as the Labour Party in the UK, I suppose that's my benchmark.
Well, if you look at the Labour Party in the UK in the last 20 to 25 years, you've seen a clear shift in terms of rights. So political parties change, and they sometimes do not appear to be their original selves. You know, the PLP in Bermuda is a challenge because there are people in the PLP who own businesses, and there are people who work in those businesses. And sometimes their interests are not aligned, and so you have problems, you have challenges. That is what I like about the PLP. Because I think ultimately, if you have difficulties inside the PLP and you resolve them, then you can much more easily resolve those issues or similar issues on the outside.
So from that definition, it seems to me that it's not necessarily a Labour Party then?
Well, I mean, that's the name of the party. It's a Labour Party.
Well, that's the name of it. We should get that for makes it sort of insinuates, it implies that it is a Labour, for Labour, for the left wing.
It is for Labour. For example,
for the working class.
For example, when the PLP in our administration forgave more than $6 million worth of debt that the BIU had.
This is the Barclay bond.
Yes, the Barclay bond. That was an example of Labour working together.
So do you think the PLP now has moved towards the centre ground then, or because he's had to?
Well, you know, I don't have a real feel for what is centre and what is left and what is right. But I would say that the current crop of PLP MPs are probably not as radical, if you will, as they were during the days of Julian Hall and other people like that. So, you know, but who knows? You know, all of that can change in a year or two.
Were you surprised at the scale of the election, 24-12?
No. No, I wasn't surprised.
Why?
I wasn't surprised at all. Because I thought that that the OBA was in such disarray, first of all, and the PLP was so organized in terms of the election organization that it would have been a shock to me if the PLP hadn't won by at least 8 to 9 seats. I would have been shocked. The OBA just kept stumbling over itself. And I don't think that they've ever resolved the issue of leadership in the OBA, you know, enough to be able to run the government. You will always have people who feel that so-and-so should not be the leader, or this gentleman or this lady should be the leader. But if you can have enough functional unity to manage the government, then those internal differences don't mean that much. But when your differences spill out into the public, it makes it very, very difficult to run the government.
Talking of leaders, is David Burt the right man?
Yes.
Why?
I think David's the right man. Because I think that he has, for a young man, I think he has a very good understanding of Bermuda, basic Bermuda, I call it. And I think that as he stays in the job, he's going to become even stronger, because he's going to learn, as I did, that there are certain things that you only learn from being there.
Is he too young, or does that count against him?
I don't think he's too young. He's young, but
he's relatively inexperienced. He wasn't as experienced when you were prior.
Relatively, but you know, I'm looking at the entire leadership in the Progressive Labour Party, and I think as long as we are able to have a good blend of age, experience, wisdom, that will be fine.
Thoughts on the government so far? Thoughts so far on the PLP's government?
I think the PLP has yet to really go into high gear.
Really?
I believe.
Seems to get off to a very quick start. Yeah, 100-day pledges, then relaxing the 60-40 rule, as reported last week.
But from what I understand, there's much more to come. So I think.
Would you like to let on? What do you understand?
No, I wouldn't do that. But I believe that you're going to see progressive change over time. And you're also going to see, you know, some controversial issues.
Well, the 60-40 rule, I think the Premier called it the sacred cow, and they have to address some sacred cows.
Yeah, but not really. You know, 60-40 used to be a sacred cow. And what we started to do was we said we would take it case by case.
That's right.
Remember?
Yes,
we take it case by case.
That.
And that's exactly
what was new about this, but it seems to be a progression on that.
Yes, there's a progression on that. And so I don't look at that as being particularly earth-shaking.
Well, immigration, the stance on immigration?
Well, I think it's still in formation. I've been reading some of the reports from that department. I've been listening to the minister. And I think once Bermudians are comfortable that we are, in fact, not a secondary consideration in our country, that a lot of the tension and acrimony that we've seen in immigration will go away. It will go away simply because people will feel confident that there is such a thing as a birthright. But I think as long as you have people saying that, you know, there is no such thing as a birthright, you know, it's just an accident and what have you, you're going to have considerable conflict in immigration.
What do you say to those people who say to get economic growth, you have to have a growth in population, and the only way to do that in Bermuda's terms is to bring more expat workers in?
Well, I think you bring in workers to satisfy the needs of the employers, you know, whatever work is available.
But they might satisfy the needs of the employers above Bermudians, but they're still contributing wealth.
And that's why we've always had around 10 or 11,000 work permits at any given time. Bermuda will always depend on help from the outside, and especially until our education system is capable of feeding people into the workforce at those higher levels, then we're going to see similar numbers of...
Because at the moment I think it's down by 4,000 or 5,000, but you think, do you think it's necessary that those 4,000 or 5,000 come back?
Well, I don't think... No, the whole idea that they left because of politics...
I don't think it was politics. I've never
so
suggested
wrong.
That.
It's
the economy.
It's the economy, and companies are operating differently now. They're using different technology, and so these are different days. Who knows what the magic number is for work permits? But what we don't want to see is Bermudians overlooked. Now, for example, in nursing, you know, every country in the world is experiencing a nursing shortage, and Bermuda is no different. And so we have to recruit nurses from abroad in order to take care of patients. Understandable. But then we also have a nursing program in Bermuda where I understand we are not producing a significant number of licensed nurses. So we've got to look at that. If we're going to have a program and that is going to help to make us more self-sufficient, then the program has to be strong and our students have to pass the necessary exams and become internationally qualified.
Just final question on the politics side, because there's other stuff we want to get through, and I've kept you a long time. I want to put this to rest, because I say this slightly with a smile on my face. There's been some speculation that you're the PLP puppet master. Are you the PLP Svengali?
No, sir, not guilty.
How much involvement do you have?
It all depends. I mean, I get involved with the PLP at times when I'm usually asked to do so. I don't impose myself on the PLP. I support the party financially and otherwise. I don't know how much longer I can keep doing it. But
again, you ask a question that ties right into why people often associate me with controversy and I can't remember the other word you use, but I speak out about these issues.
And in doing that, sometimes it incurs the wrath of certain people. But no, I'm not a Svengali, and I'm not a puppet master. If my opinion is of value, I'm sure there are people who will listen to it. Why shouldn't they? You know, I mean, I served in Parliament for the PLP for 17 years. I served as a minister for 12 years. And I served as premier for 4 years. Well, I would think you would want to talk to me every now and then.
Fair point. Moving on to some present-day issues, one of the biggest issues, in my opinion, and obviously you have your opinion on this, has been this issue of same-sex marriage. It mm-hmm. doesn't seem to go away. Last week we had a report from the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee. I don't know if you saw it on Burn News, and I don't want to read it all, but it was difficult to interpret whether the governor is going to be left alone to make a decision on this, or whether the Foreign and Commonwealth Office is going to be involved, mm-hmm. and therefore towing the UK line. What do you think the governor should do on this issue?
I think
with it being so sensitive?
I think the governor should leave it to the government. That's what I believe. But
he can't. It's not in the Constitution to do that. So in this situation, should the governor push through this bill, or should he say no, go back and have another look?
The governor should give assent to the government's position.
So you think he will?
I don't know. I'm the last person in the world to ask to predict.
But just on
what
as
what
you
the
talked
Brits
about your political
do.
Experience,
yeah,
17 years.
Sorry, I don't know. I think that the governor will do whatever he's directed to do from London.
Because if he doesn't, what kind of issue will that cause, do you think?
I have no idea.
Because if people are talking, it will say renewed calls for independence, but is that likely? Or will this blow over? Will it go away?
I don't know. You know, I've seen this issue come and go.
I know.
Come and go.
Drawing on your experience, Dr.
And so I don't know. I really, and I wouldn't even guess.
Can I ask how you stand on same-sex marriage?
I think adults should do what they think they have to do.
So you would have supported a passage to legalise marriage between same-sex couples rather than what we've got now as a civil union?
You mean
we've got now a bit of a hybrid bill.
Yeah.
It seems to be a compromise between Wayne Ferbert and his side and
yeah.
the others.
I'll tell you the truth. I believe that the civil union piece I can live with that more so, and that probably has a lot to do with the way I was raised. And then I think about the future, and I think about, you know, where the children will come from, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, really. I'm unsettled on that, and my wife and I talk about it all the time. I think the people should have rights, but I also think that you have to think about the state of your country in the future, and that debate we're still having.
You were, of course, Minister of Tourism. When the same-sex marriage, for want of a better phrase, was overruled. And I say overruled because it was a court yeah. case, there was no legislation. There's a lot of debate about whether it would put off the pink pound, to call it a better phrase. If you were still tourism minister, would that bother you?
No, in fact, when I was tourism minister, I welcomed all...
But the fact that this is, it seems to be taking away the right of same-sex marriage mm-hmm. appears to have an adverse effect, publicity-wise.
It might have. I don't know how much, you know, whether there have been cancellations and things like that. But personally, I always supported any tourists who wanted to come to Bermuda. People who had served time in prison, you know, all of them. They come, and they obey our laws, fine.
The America's Cup? Would you have brought the America's Cup to Bermuda, given the chance?
I don't think so.
Why?
I don't think so.
Because it was huge.
Great, a great sporting event. But I'm not sure that and these events are not about the results of the events. They're about television time for Bermuda. And I watched a fair amount of it on television. I don't know that the technical work that was done to show off Bermuda was as good as it could have been. And I think that we saw more shots of the water. You know, I think we saw more of the race than we did of Bermuda. It's difficult, I know from the PGA Grand Slam, that you have to impress upon the organizers that we're not doing this to see who can win the golf game. You know, we're doing this to show off and showcase Bermuda. I'm not sure that we got bang for the buck in that area.
Okay, but it was probably, it's difficult to compare the two, but as I said, you got more TV time, more exposure than all the PGA Grand Slams that were brought here and things like Beyonce.
Yeah. Well, Beyonce wasn't designed to advertise Bermuda. That was
but the Grand Slams were?
The Grand Slams, yes. Yeah, $1.5 million per year. Big difference in price.
Sure, but over a four-day stretch for about a few highlights on the golf show compared to national TV coverage in many, many countries.
No, I'm not saying, listen to me carefully, that there wasn't more TV coverage for the America's Cup.
You say it wasn't as good as it could have been.
I'm just saying, I think that they could have shown more of Bermuda. Having said that, you know, it's a big event. It's a huge event. I don't think they would do it again.
Well, they haven't had the opportunity to do it again, but I mean, but they wanted to. Everybody thinks they did anyway.
The other piece is this, and this caused some of the difficulty. Sailing at that level is the bailiwick of a small percentage of people. I don't know what the audience is, TV audience, for sailing. And it is considered a rich man's sport. And I think that factor played into the fact that most Bermudians didn't relate to the America's Cup.
But it wasn't just about the America's Cup, was it? It was about bringing other industries here, like super yachts, which will have, the theory is, will have a wider application
that.
In terms of boatyards, etc., etc.
And if that happens...
And then the knock-on in tourism as well, because of the exposure.
If that happens, and we'll see whether it happens, then only then can you say that you achieved a number of the objectives. You know, you don't know. This thing was just over in what?
It's about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's got a long time. The continuous TV coverage and press coverage. Mm-hmm. You know, hundreds of journalists were here as well. But you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't have done it.
I don't. For that price, I would be concerned. You know,
the report said the price was paid back many times.
That's what the report
PwC
said.
Report
I haven't read that report. I've heard critiques of that report, and I think they left out Cross Island.
I don't know.
Yeah, $40 million for Cross Island was never included in that report. So I don't know. I'm not familiar.
Gaming dogged you a little bit during your premiership. Mm-hmm. Still hasn't happened.
No.
Not close to getting it.
No.
At the moment. Is Bermuda ready for it?
Suffering from Bermuda paralysis.
Explain what you mean by that.
What I mean by that is, you know, there's a saying that everybody wants to go to heaven, nobody wants to die. So if you want something, you've got to go for it. When we first started talking about gaming in Bermuda, most of the states along the eastern seaboard did not have gaming. Today they do.
Mm. And there's been a lot more on, I don't know the right phrase, Indian reservations.
Yes.
They've sprung up as well.
Yeah, of course. Well, they've had that right for quite some time
exactly,
now.
Exactly, yeah. So has Bermuda blown it?
I don't know that we've blown it, but we won't be able to do it on the scale that we probably would have done it 10 years ago. I mean, I introduced it in Parliament as a green paper, just for discussion. And it was politically, destroyed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're going to do it, like I said, you've got to make up your mind you're going to do it and go ahead and get it done. But in Bermuda, there's hardly anything that is put in the table, on the table, that we don't fight about.
I was going to say, what do you think about Alan Dungy's removal from the commission?
I don't.
That was a fight.
I don't. Yeah, but I think that as an individual, one cannot doubt Alan Dungy's skills. But I do believe that he was disrespectful of the minister, and therefore I can understand his removal. But I was going to say that in Bermuda, if you discovered a cure for cancer tonight, there would be a committee against it in the morning. That's just how we are. We're toxic in that way. We always, I used to call it the BMI, the Bermuda Misery Index, you know, where we always find reasons to say no. And I don't know whether that's in the water or what it is, but, and because of that, we can't get out of the blocks. We can't get started because we put so much energy into arguing about it that by the time action time comes, we're tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have gaming in Bermuda in 2018, I would imagine every state in the U.S. along the U.S. eastern seaboard will already have gaming, which means we will have to then cater to probably a smaller market.
Given that, do you think Bermuda is actually ready for it, politically, emotionally, mentally? Is it ready for it, given all this, you know, your BMI index?
Is it ready for it? For gaming?
Yeah.
Well, it's mainly for visitors.
No, I understand that, but it's caused so much controversy. Going back to your premiership,
You
say it still hasn't happened. We haven't got an executive director of the commission.
Yeah.
The regulations are stuck in the AG's department that need to be passed before the Americans are going to be satisfied that they're going to get into business here. Yeah. It's just stuck in the mire.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that there's nothing wrong with controversy, but paralysis as a result of the controversy is a problem. So you have to have the controversy, have the argument, have the vote, move.
You tried to do that unsuccessfully. How would you do it now? How would you move it now?
Well, at least now it's reached a different point. I mean, you know,
it's got a little bit further. It's still stuck.
Yeah, it's stuck. So now you have to unstick it. And I would suggest that's going to require some leadership on behalf of the minister, maybe the premier, to look at it, see what's causing it to be stuck, and unstick it. Now that may mean that
sounds simple.
It may mean that they will be accused of being dictators.
There was an element of that already.
Yep, that's what happens in Bermuda. You try to push something, and you push it with some energy, and you can easily be labeled a dictator. But I think that if they're going to have gaming, if we're going to have gaming in Bermuda, we've got to move.
You started the big conversation when you were premier to talk about race relations. How do you think race relations stand now, all those years on?
Same or worse.
Why?
Because they don't want to have the conversation. The white people and the black people. Black people don't mind having the conversation. But for the most part, the whites in Bermuda don't see the need or the potential benefit from having that conversation.
Do you think that'll change in time?
I don't think
because
so.
It's very polarized.
Yes, it is. That's okay. But see, whites who disagree with each other, they're polarized too. But they can come together on some issues. And I believe that the same thing can happen in Bermuda. But you see, we started a Bermuda Race Relations Initiative. We had the big conversation. We had a few sessions. We had some people in from abroad to help to stimulate and motivate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going well. And then there was something that started, I think, on the blogs about who the chairman was. You know, wrong chairman, Ralph Commission. You know, he's not the person. Well, wait a minute. You're not running this. You know, you've been asked to participate in a conversation. Now, can you put down your director's, you know, a ruler and just participate? It's not your call as to who the chairman is. Chairman is Ralph Kumisiyang, period. Now let's talk. Let's just talk about, because, you know, if we don't have the conversation, then all bets are off. All bets are off. No conversation, no progress. No progress, no agreement. 22 square miles, no progress for long enough, social instability.
Just last question. We've kept you for a very long time. I want to quote from your last address to the House of Assembly when you said, "Mr. Speaker, as I reflect on my parliamentary career, and more particularly on my service as a member of the government, I believe that so much has been done tangibly and symbolically for this country that the accurate historian will label it growth, change and empowerment. How my government is judged seems based on a number of factors, and that is as it should be. For those still intent on judging me, permit me to commend to you the words of Franklin D. Roosevelt. I ask you to judge me by the enemies I have made." How's history going to record Dr. Brown?
Jeremy, I don't know. I cannot say that I don't care, but I really do believe that I should leave that up to those people who are going to make the judgment. I'm just being me, trying to do things in my way for my country. And yes, I've created some enemies, and I've created some many, many, many friends. I feel loved in Bermuda by many people, and I feel detested by some people, but that's all right. I chose this. Nobody put this on me. I chose it, and I'm an adult, and I'm willing to accept the consequences. I know what I tried to do for Bermuda. I know of the progress that was made while I was premier. How people feel about it, whether they're willing to recognize it or not, that is up to them.
On that note, Dr. Brown, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate
it.
All right.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.